Welcome to History Class After Hours. I'm Joseph Barron. Joining me is Brian.
Hello.
Today we're talking about another boat.
Another boat.
Another boat. Yep. We have a lot of boat episodes.
We do. We love boats.
We do love boats, and we really love it when they sink because it makes for interesting stories.
Yep.
So this time we are talking about a Dutch ship.
Ooh.
So you may want to take out a piece of paper. Names are going to get a little tricky. And there's a lot of them.
Yeah.
All right. But the ship's name is the Batavia.
The Batavia?
Yes, the Batavia.
That's not hard to pronounce.
No, it's also a city in Illinois.
Oh, nice.
It's a suburb of Chicago.
Ah.
Batavia. I know someone from Batavia.
Mm. Are Batavian people nice? Or?
Sure.
Okay.
So the Dutch were major shipbuilders of Northern Europe in the 16th and 17th centuries. If you know your world history, the Dutch really dominated the global trade market early on, 1600s, 1700s. Their problem is not enough people.
Too small of a country.
Too small of a country to be able to maintain everything that they were taking. But they did control the banking industry.
Mm.
Yes. They were innovators of design and technology. They did, though, use the bottom-based construction sequence, which uses a shell-first system for the lower part of the hull when they were building their ships. The planks were shipped and then shaped and then laid edge to edge, having the appearance of carvel construction, but are put in position before the frames are installed. Carvels were a form of ship back then.
That the Spanish. Was a huge AP World vocab word.
The carvels?
Yes.
Weren't they Spanish at first?
I don't remember.
Oh.
Yeah. I have to know them for Euro, too, so I probably should know them.
And it's a very old technology by this point, so they aren't really breaking ground with this regards. And probably not the best for... going across the ocean. Yes. Just keep that in mind.
All right.
So there is a company called the VOC. All right. And
the East India Company.
Mm-hmm. And they are going to generally build their own shipyards. They issued charters, which gave detailed specifications for these ships. These were updated from time to time. Charters gave a range of key hull dimensions and scheduled the sizes of scantlings. However, designs did not exist as plans or drawings that determined the shape of the hull. So what you're seeing is there's no uniformity to them, and they just kind of go as they go when they're building these things.
Huh.
Unlike ships built for European trade, the Dutch ships were planked with a double skin of oak structural planking. This was sheathed with a double layer of pine, which incorporated tar and animal hair for some reason, together with closely spaced iron nails. The pine layer was intended to resist a type of worm that would eat through ships. So the Batavia is one of these ships, which is built from oak imported from the forest bordering the Vistula.
The what?
Vistula. Vistula.
Ah.
It's a tongue twister. It's a river, though.
All right.
I believe it's in Russia. My geography is proper. All right. And it's probably the reason why there's no forest in that area anymore.
Oh.
It's because they cut them all down to build ships.
Man.
It's kind of like in Spain. They don't really have forests anymore. It's because they chopped them all down for the Spanish Armada, which went really well. That'd be good.
Destroyed.
Sunk. Batavia may have been one of the two ships specified in the VOC shipbuilding charter of March 29th, 1626. Normally it took 18 months to build one of these vessels, but sometimes there were delays. The name Batavia was chosen on June 29th, 1628. And there was a push to have that ship on the seas by September. The Batavia would become the flagship of the fleet. So they put big money in there. So on October 29th, 1628, man, it's my son's birthday, just on 1628, the newly built Batavia was commissioned by the Dutch East India Company, sailed from Texel in the Netherlands to the Dutch East Indies to obtain spices.
Everyone loves spices.
Yes.
Except the British for some reason.
They like, well, tea is kind of a spice, isn't it? You consider tea a spice? Maybe. Spicing up the water? When you say Dutch East Indies, what you are really meaning is Indonesia.
Didn't they also? No, that was Portugal. Never mind.
Portugal was India and then
Malaysia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Their orders were to use the Brouwer route. Like all ships of Dutch East India Company, this involved sailing to the south of a direct course to Jakarta. But without any way of measuring longitude, it was difficult to judge when to make that turn north. They didn't have GPS back then.
Yeah, they had astrolabes, but was that only latitude?
That could only tell you latitude.
All right.
Yeah, so that could only tell you how far you were moving east to west, not how far you were moving north to south.
Yeah.
A late turn gave the risk of running aground on the coast of Australia.
I mean, did they even know Australia was there at that point?
These early ones, maybe not.
All right.
How far south are they sailing?
Yeah. Well, do they have to sail around like
Cape of Good? I'm looking at a map right now. Yeah, it's close.
Yeah.
It's not that far off, I guess. Go around the Cape of Good Hope, head due east, and you would crash in Australia.
Yep.
All right.
Just have to know when to go up a little.
You would think you would see a massive continent, though. Be like, maybe we should go north now. Maybe that should be their bearing.
When you see
Australia, go north.
I mean, yeah. At that point, you'd hit Indonesia.
Yeah, I mean, I'm no sailor or claim to be one, but I'm just using logic here. Oh well. So it sailed under command of senior merchant Francisco Pelserot. And Arian Jacobs was the skipper on this initial journey. Pelserot and Jacobs so had previously encountered each other in Dutch Sriracha, which Pelserot will publicly dress down Jacobs after he became drunk and insulted him in front of other merchants. So they called each other names.
Huh.
So there's bad blood between both of them. Not a good start.
And they're working together.
Yes. This happened like 2 years before and they still haven't let it go.
I mean, like, if you haven't seen the dude in, like, 2 years, I mean, I feel like I wouldn't let it go either. Like, maybe if you guys, like, talked every day, like, you could work it out by then. But, like, if you're just now seeing each other, like, I wouldn't have let that go.
I'm surprised they have a duel. Seems like that's what they would have done back then.
Yeah, probably.
Also on board was the junior merchant, Geronimus Cornelius.
Cornelius?
Cornelius. Geronimus. He basically owned a shop in the Netherlands and he was bankrupt. So the reason why he went on this boat ride was because he was also considered a heretic.
How did he commit heresy?
He was a friend with a painter who was known as a heretic.
Ah. Wait, what painter was it?
Johannes van der Beek.
Okay, we didn't learn about him, but man.
That's a very touch name there.
Yep.
Johannes van der Beek. Okay. So, according to Pelserot's account, Jacobs and Cornelius conceived the plan to take the ship during the voyage, which would allow them to start a new life elsewhere using the huge supply of trade gold and silver that were on board. Remember, Cornelius has no desire to really go back to the Netherlands because he knows he's a wanted man. So they just kind of wanted to like steal the ship and kind of create their own little country somewhere.
Ah.
That's their goal. So after leaving the Cape of Good Hope, where they had stopped for supplies, Jacobs alleged by Pelserot to have deliberately steered the ship off course away from the rest of the fleet. because they were going in caravans. So it was in case like your ship broke down, you could have help. Mm-hmm. Jacobs and Cornelius had already gathered a small group of men around them and arranged an incident from which the mutiny would ensue. This involved assaulting a prominent young female passenger, Lucretia Johans, in order to provoke Palliser into disciplining the crew. They hoped to paint his discipline as unfair that would recruit more members for their sympathy. One of the big, most famous mutinies in history kind of started that way. Mutiny of the Bounty.
Yeah.
Where basically the captain was too hard on the crewmen and they all turned on him. So that's what they're trying to go for here.
So, but like, I mean, I feel like if you're being punished, because their plan involved assaulting a woman, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so I feel like if you're being punished for that, like, people aren't really going to be sympathetic because you're, you know, being punished for assault.
You would think so, because that was kind of a big deal back then. Still is a big deal.
Yeah.
But, like, even more so, I feel like, back then. Because, yeah, like, chivalry was still a
huge thing.
Huge thing, yeah. But anyway, they assaulted the woman, but she was able to identify her attackers.
Ah.
So they did punish them. I think what they were trying to go for was they were going to assault her and hopefully their plan was that the whole crew would end up being disciplined because of it. Mm. And then that would turn people. But because she was able to identify the people that attacked her.
Only though they were
punished, and the crew was like, "Deh, they got what they deserved." So it didn't work. But word started to break out that this plan was in action. But before anything could be done, on June 4th, 1629, the Batavia struck Morning Reef near Beacon Island, part of Houtman Abrahaus, off the western coast of Australia. So they forgot to turn north. Of the 322 people aboard, most of the passengers and crew managed to get ashore, but 40 people drowned.
Oh, man.
So they're down to about 282. I can do that math. The survivors, including all the women and children, were then transferred to nearby islands in the ship's longboat and yawl. An initial survey of the island found no fresh water and only limited amount of food, which consisted of sea lions and birds.
I mean, I feel like sea lion just wouldn't be that good to eat. Like, no, that's walruses that have, like, a ton of... No, sea lions also have that. Like, they've got a huge layer of fat. Like,
wasn't the balloon guy? Wasn't one of the theories with the balloon guy that ate too much sea lion or seal? That's what I'm killing him.
So. Maybe.
I think it was one of those critters.
Go listen to that episode to find out if we're making sense or not.
Balloon guy, whatever his name was.
Victor Lustig, I think.
No, Lustig was someone else. We have too many episodes.
Yeah. Go find the episode and listen to it.
Palliser realized the dire situation and decided to search for water on the mainland. A group consisting of Jacobs, Palliser, senior officers, a few crew members, and some passengers left the wreck site in a 9-meter, 30-foot longboat in search of drinking water. Yeah, so they break apart and they start searching for drinking water.
Ah.
After an unsuccessful search for water on the mainland, they left the other survivors and headed north in a danger-fraught voyage to the city of Batavia. Hey, it's what their boat's named after. That's not at the bottom of the sea. Is that irony?
Maybe.
Can that be considered? I don't know.
I'm not good enough at English.
Neither am I. En route, the crew made further attempts in the mainland to search for fresh water. In his journal, Palliser stated that on June 15th, 1629, they sailed through a channel between a reef and the coast, finding an opening around midday at a latitude guessed to be 23 degrees south, where they were able to land and water was found. They spent the night there. Look at them knowing latitude all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Look at them.
Well,
longitude.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so 23 degrees south would be. Palliser commented that the vast number of termite mounds in the vicinity and the plague of flies afflicted them. Sounds miserable. Sounds like an episode of Naked and Afraid where they always get eaten by bugs. He then stated that they continued north with the intention of finding the River of Jacob Ramensons, identified first in 1622 But owing to the wind, we're unable to land. Well, that's sad. Drake Brockman has suggested that the location is to be identified with Yardi Creek in Australia. It was not until the longboat reached the island of Nusa Kambangan in the Dutch East Indies that Palliser and the others found more water. The journey took 33 days, but everyone survived.
Nice.
Good for them. After the arrival in Batavia, the boatswain, Jan Everts, was arrested and executed for negligence and outrageous behavior before the loss of the ship. Basically, they blame him for the ship not turning north, so they kill him. Dutch, they don't mess around.
Nope, they don't.
Jacobs was also arrested for negligence, although his culpability in the potential mutiny was not guessed by Palliser. Governor General Jan Pieterszoon Cohen immediately gave Palliser command of Sardum, which is another ship, to go rescue the survivors of Batavia's wreck. He was more, though, focused on getting all the gold and silver that was in the boat. That was the primary concern.
Money.
Yep. Within a month, Palliser reached the general area where the shipwreck had occurred, but it took another month of searching to locate the exact islands again. I think you would mark that. What?
Yeah, probably.
Like
you know, maybe find out where you came from in case expedition fails.
He finally arrived at the site, only to discover that a massacre had taken place among the survivors, reducing their numbers by at least 100. This is where it gets crazy. Cornelius was one of the few men who stayed on Batavia to pillage and steal. He was one of the few who survived the final breakup of the ship and made it to Beacon Island after floating for 2 days. Though neither sailor nor soldier, Cornelius was elected to be in charge of the survivors due to his senior rank in the Dutch East India Company. He made plans to hijack any rescue ship that might return and use the vessel to seek another safe haven. Because remember, he doesn't want to go back to the Netherlands.
Yeah.
He's wanted there. And he also feels that Palliser knows that he's involved in a mutiny attempt. So it's like a no-win scenario for him being rescued. Cornelius made far-fetched plans to start a new kingdom using the gold and silver from the wreck. However, to carry out this plan, he first needed to eliminate opponents. Cornelius' first deliberate act was to have all weapons and food supplies commandeered and placed under his control. He then moved a group of soldiers led by Weeb Hayes to a nearby island under the pretense that they were supposed to be searching for water. It was about 5 miles away. And he leaves them there. They were told to send smoke signals when they found water, and they would then be rescued. Convinced that they would be unsuccessful, he then left them there to die, taking complete control of the remaining survivors. Cornelius never committed any of the murders himself, although he tried and failed to poison a baby, who he eventually strangled. This guy is not a good human being.
Why would he try and kill a baby?
Because he says it was using up precious water, and it was not useful to them.
Okay.
Instead, he coerced others into doing it for him, usually under the pretense that the victim had committed a crime such as theft. Typically, what would happen is they would just go up to the person while they were sleeping and slit their throat, or they would take them out to the ocean and throw them in it.
Huh. Well, what if they can, like, swim? Then what?
I think it took them pretty far out.
Oh,
okay. Yeah.
I thought they just like threw him at the shoreline.
Cornelius and his henchmen had originally murdered to save themselves, but eventually they began just to kill for pleasure or out of habit. Cornelius planned to reduce the island's population to around 45 so their supplies could last longer. Mm-hmm. So I believe that is called a culling. Am I right on that?
I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's what that's called.
All right.
He also feared that many of the survivors remained loyal to the company and would testify against him. In total, Cornelius and his followers murdered at least 110 men, women, and children. In what, a 3 month period?
Yeah, I think so.
It's about 3 months?
Dang.
Mm-hmm. So Although Cornelius had left the soldiers led by Hayes to die, they had in fact found good sources of food and water. There was a bunch of wallabies on the island, and they were eating them all.
I love wallabies. They're
apparently their tail's really good.
Oh, really?
It's like a steak.
Huh.
Yeah. Initially, they were unaware of the massacres taking place and sent prearranged smoke signals announcing their finds, but Cornelius just ignored them because he was hoping they were going to die. However, they soon learned of the killings from a couple of people that were able to flee Beacon Island and go meet up with them. In response, the soldiers devised makeshift weapons from materials washed up from the wreck. They also set a watch so they were ready for Cornelius' men, and they will build a small fort out of limestone and coral blocks. These guys are pretty
nifty.
Yes, they are. It's like one of those. It's like one of those like shipwreck video games where you got like build your house and stuff. They're legit doing it for real. Cornelius seized on the news of water on the other island as his own supply was dwindling, and continued survival of the soldiers threatened his own success. He went with his men to try to defeat the soldiers marooned on West Wallaby Island. However, trained soldiers were by now much better fed than Cornelius' group, and they easily defeated them in several battles. They even took Cornelius hostage at one point.
How did he escape?
His men who escaped regrouped under soldier Wouterloos.
Wouterloos?
Wouterloos. Because you don't have any water.
Ah.
Not really, but this flows nicely. Wouterloos. I think like... Wouter, I have a feeling Wouter is the Dutch variant of Walter.
Oh.
If I had to guess. This time they brought muskets to besiege the fort.
Ah.
And they almost win, but once again they lose. However, Hayes' men prevailed again just as Sardem arrived with one guy, Pelsart. And they're like, yay, we're rescued. A race to the rescue ship ensued. So now Cornelius' men are trying to swim to the rescue ship to beat the soldiers because they want to be the first one to break the story of what actually is happening. Hayes reached the ship first and was able to present his side of the story to Pelsart. After a short battle with Cornelius' men, the combined force captured all of them. Pelsart decided to conduct a trial on the islands because Sardem on return voyage to Batavia would have been overcrowded with both survivors and prisoners. After a brief trial, the worst offenders were taken to Seal Island and executed. They actually built gallows for them.
Oh.
Cornelius and several of his henchmen had both their hands chopped off before being hung.
Okay.
Luce and a cabin boy, Jan Pelgorm, they buy... who were considered only minor offenders marooned on an island off of Australia and never heard of again.
I feel like... So, minor offense gets you exiled?
I feel like that one's almost worse.
Yeah.
That's like a slow and...
Well, unless they can, like, find food and water, then... But if there's not any, then, yeah.
This made them the first Europeans to have permanently lived on Australia.
Huh.
Are they setting the tone for Australia?
Maybe.
This wasn't Australia a penal colony
yep.
at first? This location is now thought to be Witkara Creek near Kalbarri, Western Australia. The rest of Cornelia's henchmen were taken to Batavia for trial. Five were hung. Several others were flogged, keel-hauled, or dropped from the yardarm on the later voyage back home.
So, like, it wasn't bad enough that they had to be executed, like, on Australia. They just, you know, got executed on the way home.
I'm kind of, what? So, yeah, like, the yardarm is, like, what, the plank?
Maybe.
So, why would they go through the, it's higher up than the plank. Oh. You know, on sail ships, the beam that goes... horizontal,
yeah,
that's the yard arm.
Oh,
so they're actually taking them up there and throwing them off it.
Man, that's
I'm confused by it. Like, why are you putting forth that effort to like put them back on the boat, sail them back to the Netherlands, only to, drop them off.
Maybe it's like a show of force, kind of. Like, you're not safe anywhere.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's probably something to do with, like, looking good.
You know what keel hauled is?
No.
It's when they tie you to a rope and they throw you overboard and drag you behind the ship.
Huh. So kind of like quartering, but like on a boat.
The hull of the ship was usually covered in barnacles and other marine growth. Thus, keel hauling would typically result in serious lacerations.
Oh.
Which the victim would suffer from infection and scarring.
That's not good.
There was always the risk of head trauma. Huh. That seems. And then they're in salt water too with all those.
Oh, man.
That's got to feel great. Well, these guys kind of deserved it. But Cornelius' second in command, Jacob Pietertz, was broken on the wheel, the most severe punishment available at the time. I think that is literally where they tie you to a wheel and they beat you until you die.
I mean, did it have to be on a wheel, or like, could they just, do it off a wheel and skip that whole process?
First, they would break your leg bones. It's not good. Yeah, you don't want that to happen to you.
All right.
I think they literally like tie you to a wheel and they just start, doing bad things to you.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll leave it at that. Jacobs, despite being tortured, did not confess to his part in plotting the mutiny and escaped execution due to lack of evidence. What finally became of him is unknown. He may have died in a prison in Batavia. A board of inquiry decided that Pelsart had exercised a lack of authority and was therefore partially responsible for what happened. His financial assets were completely seized and he died within a year later. Hayes was hailed a hero and promoted to sergeant, which increased his salary, while those who had been under his command were promoted as well to the rank of corporal. Of the original 332 people on board Batavia, only 122 made it to the port. Sardam eventually sailed home with most of the treasure previously carried on Batavia itself. Of 12 treasure chests that were originally on board, 10 were recovered and taken under Sardam. And I believe treasure hunters are still looking for the other two. It's a famous sunken treasure that people are looking for. So that is the story of the Batavia.
All right. Very wild.
Wild and crazy, yes.
Yep.
They really went off the deep end. Well, thank you for listening, and join us next week as we are starting our spooky series.
Ooh.
A look at Halloween and other hauntings.
Thank you for tuning in to History Class After Hours, the show where we talk about the things your history teachers didn't have time to teach you. If you wanted to stay updated on upcoming events for the History Club, please visit www.starsmillhistoryc.wixsite.com/2020. If you liked this episode, please share it with your friends and subscribe to our channel on iTunes Podcast, Spotify, or wherever you're listening. Be on the lookout for new episodes, and we'll be posting every week. Until next time, stay curious.